thought our date went well. Did you think it went well? Maybe they don't like me as much as I think. Oh no, I like them more than they like me. Oh no, now I'm a stalker.
It's time for the Profitability Show. Inspiring conversations with successful business leaders, artists, and entrepreneurs that will get your blood pumping and your creative juices flowing. We'll focus on the latest and the greatest tools, techniques, strategies, and advice you can apply right now to achieve more success and improve your bottom line, no matter what business you're in. The Profitability Show, the business podcast that brings you less jargon and more margin. With your host, digital product strategist and innovator, Nick Knight.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to another power-packed episode of The Profitability Show. My name is Nick Knight. I'm your host and, let's face it, your newest BFF. Today, we'll be spending time with a team of experts, a university professor, an economist, a best-selling author, a professional speaker, a business consultant, and a Navy commander. Now, if this episode seems like it might be a little bit too crowded, you'll be surprised to know that all of those impressive titles actually belong to just one person, my good friend and mastermind partner, Mary Kelly. Mary served 21 years as an officer in the Navy, trained over 40,000 personnel, and retired as a commander. She still teaches cadets at the Air Force Academy and also teaches leadership skills to business executives, which brings us to her new book, Why Leaders Fail and the 7 Prescriptions for Success, now available on Amazon and bookstores everywhere. Now, I'm not one to brag, but I once had my picture taken with Mary sitting together in a bathtub. So, you can see that for yourself on this episode's show page at profitabilityshow.com. Mary Kelly is a super fun person to be around. She is also wicked smart. You are in for a great chat with Commander Mary Kelly, PhD. Well, I am so excited to be on the show today with probably the most insanely accomplished person I know. She's a professional speaker. She's a Navy commander, university professor, economist, author, and a business consultant on the topic of leadership. I am way out of my league with none other than Mary Kelly. Mary, thank you so much for being on the Profitability Show.
Oh, Nick, it's so exciting to be here with you today. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's great. It's great. So you've got so many things going on. We're going to talk about your book in a minute. But first of all, I just want to talk about some of your businesses. I don't know if we'll get to all of your many businesses, but probably the one that really intrigued me when we first met was your military career. Tell us a little bit about your military career.
Well, I was very fortunate, Nick. I went to the Naval Academy, and as you know, when you go to the Naval Academy, then you get to serve for 5 years minimum on active duty after that, which was terrific. And I was fortunate to stay for 21 years after graduating from the Naval Academy, and I had terrific opportunities, mostly dealing in intelligence and logistics.
Wow.
So I got to travel. I was mostly stationed in Asia. I got to run bases like Pearl Harbor, things that people have heard of, and I was very fortunate.
Wow, that is beyond impressive, obviously. That's really, really crazy. Now, so your military career, as far as being an active commander, you've retired since then, but you've continued on as a professor. Is that correct?
That's correct. I was so lucky because I went to school at night, on my own, because I felt really strongly that there's just so much to learn. So I did grab a PhD in economics and a couple master's degrees along the way.
You grabbed one? That's how it is for you? You just grabbed one?
It helps when you only, when the Navy teaches you to get by on not very much sleep. So that's terrific. And so I was fortunate to do that. And I was in Asia, like I said, so I got to do research in the countries I was working on. So that was great. And then I was teaching at Hawaii Pacific University in Hawaii. And then my very last tour in the Navy, I got to teach at the Naval Academy back in Annapolis, Maryland. And then when I got out of the Navy, I was fortunate on two counts. So first, I got to travel the country a little bit, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. But I had people who had heard me talk in front of groups when I was still on active duty. And, you kind of get extra points when you're in uniform. You kind of get a few extra points. And then I also brought my dog. My dog's really cute. Uh-huh. So you kind of get a few extra points. And then when I retired, then I got on the speaking circuit for some people who had heard me speak when I was on active duty. So that worked out okay. And then I landed sort of in Colorado, and I didn't know anybody here. And I wound up getting getting a job at the Air Force Academy and doing some teaching in the economics department there. And they're terrific to me. They're wonderful. They are appreciative. They're pretty much every perfect, you know, it's just a great place to work. And the cadets are wonderful fun. They're just like midshipmen, and it's just a blast.
That is so cool. So all of those things that you did with your military career, that was a lot of you getting up in front of a classroom, talking about things with people and presenting. And is that what then kind of launched your speaking career? Is that where that came from?
Well, I think what happened more was when I was on active duty, you know, we try a lot when you're on active duty to serve the community. And so people would call up and say, hey, can somebody come talk to the Boy Scout Jamboree or the Girl Scouts Thin Mint Dinner or, you know, the FBI or Congress. And I was fortunate that, again, that, they would call me up my office and say, hey, can you go talk about something to this group of people? And I put together a program called Leadership Lessons from the Dog, because they said, what do you know? I said, I know leadership and I know dogs, and I can put them together and make money. People like that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I got started. And then that just continued from there. So I was fortunate. I've always taught. I've always been in front of groups, and I like it. I genuinely enjoy it.
That's really cool. So I remember that, a number of your books are kind of from the perspective of a dog.
Well, I like to use examples that people can relate to. Right now, less than 1% of Americans have ever been in the military. So many of those people only know what they see on TV, you know, Full Metal Jacket and, you know, Clint Eastwood and whatever. And the leadership principles, in order for leadership to work, leadership has to be easy. It has to be attainable. Otherwise, people can't do it. It's like asking people to recycle and then making it impossible for them to do it.
Right.
People want to do the right thing, and you just have to make it easy for them.
So give us a quick definition from your perspective of the word leadership. What does that entail?
Leadership is getting people to do what you know they need to do in a way that makes them want to do it. That's great leadership, in my mind.
Okay, and so your new book is called Why Leaders Fail, which has a very kind of interesting title there, Why Leaders Fail. And it begs the question, why do leaders fail? Why is that?
Thanks for asking. So if you look around, there are about 2.4 million books out on leadership and how to be successful as a leader and how to be great and how to be fantastic. And there's a lot out there on how to be fantastic. And we took a different perspective. We were sitting down one day, my co-author, Peter Stark, who's brilliant, by the way. And we said, you know what? Good leadership, when you do it right, is really tough. It's all consuming. It gets in your head and you're thinking about it all the time. And when you're thinking about it all the time and you're trying to always do the right thing and you're balancing all the factors, all the pieces, everything that goes into making good decisions, it's tough. And so we were discussing how we're going to put this together. And Peter said, you know, leadership's really hard. I said, leadership can be really, you know, leadership can be just a series of not really good options. You know, people are fond of saying, I didn't have a choice. Well, we always have a choice. We just sometimes don't have great options. Mm-hmm. And that was one of those things. And he said, you know, it's really interesting why, you know, people fail. I said, even more interesting to me is why good people, really good people, when put in jobs of leadership or higher authority or all of a sudden are supervisors, good people so often fail so miserably and so often. And the news is full of it. The media is full of corporate failures and, you know, CEOs who have failed. And then if you look at the headlines today, you know, car industries, people lied. And then, you know, we could get into politics, but we'd be here all day. So sometimes leaders fail, and good people, when put in leadership positions, fail. So we looked at the points of failure. And then from there, we looked at how to generate success.
So now, as a business leader, you know, of my business and stuff like that, I'm curious, like, what are some of the things that you would say is like at the top of the list of things to kind of identify in your own company culture or in your environment that you can start to make some actionable strategies to not fail? Failing would be bad. I don't want to fail.
And you're right. So failure is bad, and you're absolutely right about that. And what we identified is we did surveys. First off, instead of being like a lot of leadership books that was oh, this is how I feel today, so I'm going to write on this leadership topic, or this is how what my perspective was. We took real data. We took surveys over 10 years of 100,000 employees and then 10,000 managers. And then from there, we broke it down into categories and taxonomized it. Not taxidermy, that's a whole other thing. But we put things in categories, and that's what we came up with. And one of the our first chapter is the vision issue. So leaders sometimes think, well, the company has a mission and a vision and goals, so we'll just do that. But they don't really adopt it as theirs, and they don't internalize it. And worse, they don't really make that vision their vision for their department, their division, their team, or whatever. And that idea of not having a vision, when you're the leader, people will follow what you do and what you know. And if you don't have a vision, then people don't know what to do. They honestly are confused. Mm-hmm. And so you have to take the vision, which is where you really want to go. If you had no constraints, unlimited resources, where would you take this organization? And then you have to look at, all right, what are we going to be doing in 5 years? And that's your mission. So, for example, we make tennis shoes. We make sneakers, whatever. Well, where are we going to be in 5 years? How is that going to change? What's going to change in that industry? And then our vision is we are going to be the top producer of tennis shoes in North America by 2020. That's the vision. So then people go, oh, okay. Because the reality is most people, when they go to work, don't feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves. So in the military, you kind of are part of something bigger than yourself. And they make it very clear that you're a very, very tiny part of that.
Right.
Right? But the idea is you generally believe that what you're doing is important. And people want that. They want to know where they're going. So not having a really positive vision, not having clear mission, ideology, and data points, and then not having goals to get there. So as a result, people just show up to work and they fumble around and they waste a lot of time. And if their supervisor or manager's not there or they don't have any orders that day, and sometimes they just don't do anything at all. And this is one of the failure points we see.
Yeah, that's very familiar from back in the day when I had a real job and stuff. You see it all the time when you're working for a company. If you haven't been brought into the fold of the company, if you don't feel like I have some kind of ownership, I have some kind of, they didn't let me own this department. They didn't let me, I can't run my own show here. And then you kind of check out mentally. It's really about I show up to get my paycheck. And when I go home, I don't even think about the company. I could care less. It's not my problem. And I remember feeling that way about companies when I was a kid. When I got my first jobs, you don't care, right? You work for the fast food place or the whatever, and you could care less. But there is something to be said for bringing those people in and making them feel proud of what they're accomplishing at their job. And I think that's going to be a part of building a great leader.
That's exactly right. And one of the questions I like to ask when I go into organizations, when I talk to the employees, I ask the question, how many of you feel as though you are truly valued by the organization, that they listen when you talk, that when you provide feedback, they take action on it, that they care about developing you as a person, as well as a professional, that they are hoping for your career advancement and they're working with you to make that happen, that they care about you and your family, your community, your whole world, as well as just making profit. Now, keep in mind, I'm an economist. We have to make profit. Profit is good. If you're not making profit,
name of the show.
That's it. You have to make profit. Profit is good. Otherwise, it's a hobby that you're just spending a lot of time on. If you're not making profit, you can't pay your employees well. You can't send them to school. You can't help them take care of their families. You can't help in the community. You have to make profit. But that means making a profit by offering great value for great products with great people. It's a recipe for great stuff.
No, it is fantastic. Well, I want to circle back real quick and talk again more specifically about you and your career. I like to balance it with the stuff that you know against what you've actually experienced in your own business life. So we talked a little bit about your military career. Now, you're also a professional speaker. You're also an author of several books. Tell us about that side of your career. What's going on there? What is that about?
Oh, thanks. So I started writing books like a lot of us did by accident. Sort of somebody said, can you contribute a chapter to this book? Can you help us edit this book? And then it kind of takes off from there. So the first couple books I did, there's two leadership books that they still use at the Naval Academy, and they were collaborations. That means about 1,000 people per year buy a book that they will ever read.
Yes.
And that's fine. We know how this works. And then when I got out of the Navy, I had some time and started writing my 10 leadership lessons that were real popular at the time. And I put it together in a book, and that's the Master Your World book. Master Your World, 10 slightly dog-inspired leadership lessons to improve productivity, profits, and communication. And someone yesterday said, do you have a... do you know of any leadership book that's just, my team just needs a boost and they can't spend a lot of time on it and we just need something to go forward. And I said, you know what? I have a book. I will give it to you. It's called Master Your World. It's perfect for that. It is perfect for supervisors who are just looking for, hey, what do I need to do to take my team up to a level? It's not rocket science, but the 10 techniques in there work all the time. So that's terrific. That one became a bestseller, so that was nice. I have another book out called 15 Ways to Grow Your Business in Every Economy. And that's, again, I like numbers because it's how my brain works. So 7 steps, 15 ways, it just works for me. 15 Ways to Grow Your Business. And that one did really well because organizations would take one chapter every week and say, okay, we're going to do this week to grow our business. And in 15 weeks, they see progress, they see an
Fantastic.
ROI.
Wow.
So that's really nice.
I want to definitely link to all of your books and stuff on this episode page.
Oh,
so
thank
that
you.
People can access these things. It is really interesting. Now, you have a book that I remember when you showed it to me and, you know, it started your funereal music playing, right? But then I showed it to my wife and she was like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. And then this sounds like a setup. It's not a setup. As I was waiting for this call to start, I'm sitting here at my desk and I pull out Speaker Magazine, which is actually right here. I pulled it out of the plastic because it gets mailed to me. So this issue right here. And it opens up to the center stapled area and bang, there's Mary Kelly with a giant article about what happens when no one knows, why speakers need to plan and get organized now. And it really reminded me of that fantastic book that you wrote about preparing for the worst. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So that's called In Case of Emergency, Break Glass. So the book talks about things that nobody really wants to talk about, but we kind of do. We're not all gonna survive forever. And making sure that we plan now to make sure our families, our friends are not left with a mess if we either become incapacitated or die, or what's happened out here in Colorado is people have had to evacuate because we've had fires. So could you grab all of your important papers in less than 2 minutes and get out the door and get in your car? And the answer for 99% of Americans is no. So the idea behind the In Case of Emergency Break Glass program is to walk people through making it easy to organize your life documents. Things like a letter of instruction. Wills, people say, well, I've got a will. A will is a good place to start, but it's really only about 10 to 15% of what you really need to have. For some people, they need a trust. For some people, they need to make sure that they've got powers of attorney, that they've got to have healthcare directives, that their financials are all in place. Most couples operate with one person handling the finances and the other person being happily oblivious. Mm-hmm. And that's just how it is. But if that person who's handling the finances all of a sudden gets, you know, hit by a bus or somehow incapacitated, the other person is left with a huge mess. And then people just don't realize state laws differ in how estates are handled. Mm-hmm. And some states are very reasonable. For example, Colorado is very reasonable. But for example, the state of Texas has 3 different kinds of property: personal property, real property, and your property. What are you supposed to do with that? For a long time in the state of Texas, if you were married, you had to literally go through and count the pairs of shoes and numbers of shirts that person had. It's crazy.
Wow.
And there's just so much to think about. And many times people don't think about it. They think about it maybe when they get married, and then they think about it when they have their first child. But for a lot of Americans, they have a will, but it hasn't been updated in, say, 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's other kids by that point. Maybe there's grandkids. maybe you're not married to that person you made the will with in the first place. These are things people have to do. And again, the will is just a start. The other big problem that people have is, let's say they got in a life insurance policy and you got it through your employer. Fantastic. Well, it started out with one company, and then 20 years later, it switched companies 17 times because they renew they redo contracts every year. So then somebody passes away, you call up, and they say, "Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have a record of that. We don't have a valid number like that." And they go, "Oh, okay." And they put down the phone and they never take it any further because they think, "Well, I guess it doesn't exist." When in reality, that person's been paying on that life insurance policy for 20 years, and now the family doesn't get to collect it. And it's billions of dollars that doesn't get collected. So these are things that even people who try to take good care of their families, sometimes by not putting that final piece of the puzzle into place, they have failed. And the idea, again, my whole world is about getting rid of failure, making success, and making sure that you're not 85 years old, lying in a hospital bed, on pain medication, you know, trying to worry about these details. It's so much better to do it now over a glass of wine when you're feeling good and say, this is what I want to have happen. So that's that program. And we try to make it easy. It's fill in the blank. It's beautifully laid out. It's gorgeous.
That's fantastic. So if you go through the steps and you kind of gather all that information, apart from the things like, you know, making sure your wife, who is the oblivious happy one, making sure that she has passwords to the bank accounts and the things like that, you know, because even those things, she doesn't know those things, you know, because, right? And but apart from those things, how much of this do you actually have to go and get, like, legalized somehow or notarized or something to make it actually stand up in court?
That's the great part. So first, I know there's options where you don't have to get your will notarized or done by a lawyer. I really advise against that, and I'll tell you why. If you've got any kind of situation where somebody's going to come out of the woodwork and make a claim, those self-done wills are very easy to be overturned. And now your family gets dragged through a longer probate. Probate is 6 months anyway, but all of a sudden now it's longer, it's extended, it's contested, and this becomes a big problem. Trusts are fantastic for people who don't want to have their families worry. You can set it up. It takes a lawyer to do that too. Most lawyers, most estate planning lawyers, if you get a will or a trust, and if you get a trust, you get a will with that. And then all the will says is see trust. It's literally, we exist, see trust. And then it flies through probate because the trust then orchestrates the estate. Mm-hmm. But most estate planning attorneys will do healthcare directives and powers of attorney at that time. What a lot of people don't realize, for example, is financial powers of attorney have to be done usually through that financial institution. So your bank, your credit union, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, whoever, they have their own power of attorney. And a lot of people don't realize, oh, you have to go to that organization, that bank, and fill out their form for that. And that's the part where you don't need a lawyer, but you do need to know what to do. And we walk through that. So the only things you really need a lawyer for are the will and the trust and the powers of attorney that deal with a generic power of attorney and healthcare directives if you so choose to run that route. But you can also, on a healthcare directive, you can, you know, sign to somebody else. Again, the big mistake that people make is they have more than one person acting as their executor or more than one person acting as their medical power of attorney person, and that becomes a problem. I see parents all the time that say, I've got four kids. All four of my kids can decide together. That is a terrible idea. It pretty much solidifies the fact that they're going to fight and there's going to be problems. One person needs to be in charge. In my family, there's four of us, and my siblings are terrific, and we all get along great. But even my own parents, in their will and trust, put, if anybody argues with Mary, I'm the executor, they get the sum of $1. Because they don't want there to be silliness. Yeah. And it just makes it really clear that they thought about it and they've decided this is what's going to happen. And that's what the court system is looking for.
Wow. It's really interesting. Now, I would I'd touch on one more thing because it's interesting for me personally. So I was always under the assumption, and, you know, I have a very small family. You know, it was a son of seven and my wife and I. And I always just assumed, apart from the headaches, I get that this book and this program that you've created really gets rid of so much headache, which is where I really see the problem. But from a legal standpoint, I just assume if I kick the bucket, just everything is my wife's. Like, she just gets it all. Is that not the case?
That is not the case. See? So if you die intestate without a will, depending upon the state you live in, that's what happens. And people can check that out, by the way, for their individual states. There's a terrific website called mystatewills.com. Wow. And you can put in your scenario for your state, and it will tell you, oh gosh, well, you've got a wife, but you've also got a sister, and you've got living parents. So depending on the state, your parents may get some, your sister may get some, and then your wife would get the rest. In some states, if you're married and it's your second marriage and you maybe had a child with your first spouse, your kids by your first spouse get half. And then your current spouse and those kids get the other half. Well, the problem with that is, what if your kids are 35 years old, living on their own, they don't need anything, but in order to stay in your current house, your current spouse would have to sell everything and move.
Right.
And all the, and that's not what people intended. So mystatewills.com is a great way to check on that.
Wow, that is so interesting. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few minutes where I'm going to talk to you about some more things. I'm going to talk to you about your trip that you're going on very soon, because that was exciting news. And I'm also going to talk to you a little bit about how you monetize your business, your own personal business, especially as an economist. You must have done some interesting stuff there. We'll find out about that. And also Mary Kelly's special profit abilities. We'll find out what those are when we get back.
Are you looking to learn business strategies from some of the top experts in the world? Or are you looking to earn income as a leading expert yourself? At Revisit, we empower leaders, innovators, and experts to create online learning products that get better over time. Interactive learning products on Revisit remain live connected to the creators, who can add or update the content instantly, offer direct access and feedback, exclusive communities, and even special discounts and offers. Our unique app-based solution means the products you buy or create will remain exclusive and valuable in the hands of paying customers only. So, start learning or start earning at revisit.com. That's R-E-V-I-Z-Z-I-T.com.
And now, back to the Profitability Show.
And we're back with Mary Kelly, who is one of the most accomplished people on the planet, I think. We're asking her all kinds of questions. As an economist, it's fascinating to get her insights on these things. As a Navy commander, it's my job to listen to whatever she says to do, so I do it. I know that you are planning on going on a trip as part of some extension of your military involvement. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I'm heading to Nepal with 5 Air Force Academy cadets, and our job in Nepal is to do an economic analysis of whether or not Nepal, which is landlocked, should be pursuing more ecotourism and trying to sustain that in an ecologically environmental and profitable way, or whether or not they should be focusing on more manufacturing, which means they have to ship things in and ship things out. And that's been very difficult lately because, you know, a year ago they had the earthquake. And then after the earthquake, India imposed an embargo on them, which made it very difficult for them to get their goods in and out of the country. So we're going over to try to make recommendations, and we're working with a terrific company called Purna. And I've got 5 cadets, and they are terrific. They're motivated. They're excited to go. And I'm lucky to be the grown-up that gets to go with them.
Wow, that is a tall order. So just a little bit more, how exactly are you going to pursue that information?
So what we're doing is we are heading into Kathmandu. It's kind of a Bob Seger song. We're going to Kathmandu.
Nice.
And once we get there, we are going to do, we're going to take a day to do some cultural, get our feet on the ground, just watch and see how people are behaving as consumers. We're looking at consumer behavior issues, and we're going to tool around Kathmandu. We're meeting with the CEO of a garment manufacturing company there. And we've met with him before, and now we get to see the plant, and we're excited about that because we've already put together marketing ideas and ways that they can increase profitability. And then we're meeting with a hydroelectric engineer, and we're looking at ways that we can get clean water into some of the areas that have water, but it's not clean. So that's one of the challenges, of course. And then we are getting on a bus, and we are hiking out to a village which is about 6 hours away, and where there's no roads and everything gets hiked in. And it's a village and people live there. And we are doing some business work, and we're doing some work at the school. We're doing some English classes, which is one of the things they want. And then we are verifying homestays. So what we're doing is there are people who, for people who want to trek in Nepal, you know, hiking and trekking and climbing is big there, that they want to have their homes certified or verified as a homestay for tourists. Mm. And so we go in and we say, so as a tourist, and you have to remember, there's no electricity in this village. There's no electricity. What you're sleeping on has never seen a washing machine. It never will, in all likelihood. So things that tourists would want and what they would pay for, and then how to make that available to tourists in an eco-friendly way. So that's what we're looking at, and I'm very excited to have a terrific team.
And how long does this trip last?
This is about 12 days.
Wow, that's amazing. You're going to be busy. Well, that sounds very exciting, obviously. I don't even know how you start these kind of projects, but they're always impressive. I want to ask you a little bit about your business as, you know, how you're bringing in, you know, revenue. You have your various revenue streams. Obviously, you're selling books. You're doing speaking engagements. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, how does your business work? How much time do you spend on? What's a typical day like? Give us some idea of what Mary Kelly's life is like.
So I love work, and I do a lot of it. And so for my business part, because I do have some teaching days built into what I do, and they get whatever time they pay for, they get. And I will never, ever, you know, cross over that line.
This is with the Air Force Academy.
This is at the Air Force Academy. So I get up early. I get up about 4 and I work until about 7:30, and then I drive into the Air Force Academy, and then I am there till about 4:30 or 5, and then I come home and I work from about 6 till 11 at night on the business. So, and then the business is pretty much Saturdays and Sundays, and that sounds like it's a part-time thing, except it's not. Because it gives me a good 8 to 10 hours a day working on the business, and that's fantastic. And then I still get to be a practicing economist. I still get to be a leadership expert. And, you know, it's a contract at the Air Force Academy. They understand I'm a contract professor. So what I do is I get up every morning and I have a plan. I know I've planned out the week. I know what I've got to do. On my website, there is something, my productivity sheet, what I use every single day for profitability to keep me on track is my productivity sheet. It's under free stuff, productiveleaders.com, free stuff. Okay. It will be there forever because that's how I am able to find it. So I put things that I need on my website, which takes it out of my head. I don't have to worry about, is it in Dropbox? Is it in the cloud? Where can I find it? No. If I need it, it goes on my website under free stuff. So that's one.
Okay.
I do one of those sheets every single day. It's my to-do, my follow-up, my phone calls, my appointments. I have one of those sheets every single day. It's Tuesday, the 10th of May, 2016. What do I need to do? Because let's face it, we're busy. And if something falls through the cracks or we didn't do a follow-up, that costs us money. So the productivity sheet is the tool that I use in terms of what it takes to be profitable for me and my business. Follow-up, follow-up, follow-up. And as our friend Lori Guest says, follow-up on the warm leads before they get cold. And that is the one thing I screwed up early in this business, and I tried very hard not to screw that up again, because warm leads do get cold. People forget who you are. If you're not following up, that's the issue. So having a system in place to follow up and follow up after every event, or follow up with people who say, yes, I want to bring you into my corporation as a coach or to speak or to do some training or for a conference, making sure you've got that in place is huge. And I have backups. I do have a terrific admin assistant. My website person is she's so responsive. She's unbelievable. And I have a business manager as well. So I have 3 people who help me stay on track. And if I'm not delivering for them what they need at a certain time, they all know that my direction to them is nag. Go ahead. Send it, bring it, and I'll get it done. And if it's on my list and I do need 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night, and it doesn't get done and they tell me it's a priority, then I make it my priority, and that's how it works.
Wow,
that's
fantastic.
So those 2 things.
So it sounds like you just hit on your profitabilities for me, but I'm gonna just see if I can pull another one out of you, because so we talked about your your productivity chart. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I want to ask you about is, so in terms of profitability, I like to frame this question as, what's that thing that Mary Kelly says, you know what, I got to start doing more of this because that's going to put more dollars in the bank. I mean, that's the direct equation. And, you know, for some people, it's something that they can't stand doing, but they go, you know what, I got to do it because it means this. And for other people, it's the thing that they love to do. What would you say that maybe other entrepreneurs, small business people could benefit from your profitability? What would that be for you?
So the thing that I do that I'm good at, that I know puts more profitability in the bank account, is I'm very disciplined in terms of what I get done. I don't waste time. There's a lot of entrepreneurs out there, solopreneurs, who when they get by themselves and they're working perhaps out of their house, mm-hmm. they're in their jammies all day long, you know, they're in their sweatpants, they do the laundry, they go for a walk, or maybe they meet with friends, they have lunch. They don't treat the business as a business. They don't treat it as a 10 to 12 to 14 hour a day business. And that's the number one thing that I think I probably do that gives me an advantage. And it somebody says, well, maybe it's your military background. Well, my parents were pretty strict, so I think it was probably my parents, in all honesty. But having the discipline to sit down and really structure what for a lot of people is an unstructured day. That's one. The second thing is, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was from a guy who said, wake up every day and do the things that's going to make you money first. It's not checking your email. It's not posting on Facebook. It's not checking your LinkedIn profile. It's not calling a friend to see how your day is going. No, it's making the hard phone calls, which is the follow-up. And mm-hmm. and the follow-up is something that's kind of hard for me because it's the different, it's kind of like dating. You know, you're like, did they like me? Did they like me? I thought our date went well. Did you think it went well? Maybe they don't like me as much as I think. Oh no, I like them more than they like me. Oh no, now I'm a stalker. So trying to maintain that balance is hard. So what I've tried to do, and my approach, and is not as aggressive as a lot of people's approach. I think I can probably learn to be a little bit better at that. And I don't think I close sales well. I think I could be more profitable if I could learn to close sales well. It's one of the things I work on. I have a hard time asking for the sale.
And I had our friend Jeffrey Hazlett on the show, and his profitability was sales.
He's great selling. At the ask, and he's great at the close. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I am. How my business sort of runs by, we're big fans of karma. So when I think I need more business, I say, okay, what can I give to my clients?
There you go.
So that's awesome. How I look. I always look for the touch points. I always look for, okay, so what am I going to give to my clients that's going to provide value to them? And I don't worry about the return on investment, because I really do truly believe that what goes around comes around. And it may not be them, but they're gonna go, oh yeah, Mary. Oh yeah, I just talked to Mary and she's doing this new thing. So when the new book came out, I went to my past clients and I said, you know, I'd love to do this new book as a webinar for you all. You know, you brought me in the last couple of years. I know you're not ready to bring me in again, but this is a really good webinar. Are you folks interested in a free webinar? And they jumped on it. And then they said, oh, you know what? You'd be perfect for this group. And then that's how that works.
It's great. You know, I see that same thing happen with me. I have to say, we're probably very kindred in that sense that I'm not the guy that wants to, like, you know, do sales calls and like push myself onto people. But I like to go out and help. And I like to be on top of mind of somebody. Oh, you know what? You might want to go talk to Nick because he's got some ideas on this and that, whatever. And I do find that, yeah, putting yourself out there in a way that you're not expecting anything almost always brings in some kind of a return. It's just really interesting. And I don't know if it's karma or if it's, I don't know how that is. For me, it's just almost every time, you know, if you're sincere about it and you go out and you try and help people, then it's just interesting how they come up and go, hey, you know what? You should meet so-and-so, or you get a referral, or you get a lead, or you get something. And, you know, and so I am totally with you on that. I think that's a great way to go.
And it's like you on the show. you know, you'll never know how many people you're helping with their business, you know, by doing this as a great service for so many people. And, you know, one thing that one person takes away could mean the difference in their whole business. And if it wasn't for you, they never would have known that. So you're doing exactly the same thing.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. I hope that there's people out there that are listening and taking away, you know, these conversations. I'm excited to have them with my guests. You know, I'm excited to have this conversation with you. And I know that there's going to be all kinds of great nuggets. And because it's this type of format of a show, I get to ask you the questions I want to ask. And I get to, you know, it's direct, right? And so I'm hoping that other people are going to be able to feel like they were part of this conversation and they got to take those things away as well. So, Mary, you've talked about a lot of really cool stuff on the show today. I heard you casually mention something about free stuff. We always love free stuff. Free stuff's one of my favorite things. You've got a lot of books that could really help our listeners. You have a lot of things to offer. Where can we find out more? How can we get in touch with you? What's the best place to start that journey?
ProductiveLeaders.com is the website, ProductiveLeaders.com.
Okay.
And there's a tab called Free Stuff. And under there are the things I use all the time, including the free 4-page checklist for the in case of emergency break glass that you talked about.
Okay.
There's the free productivity sheet, the free 1-page, the 5-minute business plan, the vision plan to help people get on track, just all the things I use all the time. There's a profit and loss template there for people who are just not sure, am I making money? Am I not making money? How do I do that? There's also a terrific interactive budget. It's totally, nothing stays on my server. It's not weird that way. It's all just yours for the taking. It's a budget and it allows you to change the numbers and it does the math for you. And it talks about the what you're expecting to pay, what you actually paid, and then the difference, because some months are better than others. We all know that. Mm-hmm. And it allows people to really set themselves up for success. So that's the free stuff on the Productive Leader side. In the store are my books, and most everything is on Amazon, as you know. But I do have, for the Why Leaders Fail book, I do have some unbelievably good book bonuses happening. You know, we give stuff away all the time, of course, because we want people to have stuff that's going to make them more successful. And a bunch of my friends got together on my new book, the Why Leaders Fail book, and they are doing this huge promotion, like $800 worth of giveaways. Fantastic. For the Why Leaders Fail book. So if people go to the website and sign up for the newsletter, they'll get that information on how they can basically spend $20 on a pretty darn good book. I think it's pretty good. I hope so. Other people said so, so I'm hoping. And get about $800 worth of free stuff to make them even more successful.
Fantastic. Well, I remember one other thing that you mentioned that I was going to ask you about. Is the webinar you talked about, is that something that people can participate in, or is that done?
It's not, but if somebody's got a corporation or an organization and they're looking for a great webinar, it's absolutely something I would do.
Oh, fantastic. And they can reach you by email and social media and everything from ProductiveLeaders.com.
Mary@ProductiveLeaders.com. Exactly.
Fantastic. Well, it's so great to have you here. And I didn't mention at the top of the show, Mary is yet another one of my guests who's also in my mastermind group. So I'm slowly working my way through, because they wouldn't be in my mastermind group if I didn't have the highest respect for them and think they were geniuses. So, but it's great to have you on the show, Mary. Thank you so much. And I hope everybody got something from this. You couldn't have got it from a better source than Mary Kelly. Mary, thanks again for being on the show. And I look forward to talking to you again on Thursday in our mastermind call.
Thanks, Nick. It's always great to get a chance to talk to you. And I love this podcast. People are getting just amazing value. And thank you so much for doing it.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to learn more profit abilities, go to profitabilityshow.com for episodes, show notes, and more. And be sure to click the subscribe button to get the latest episodes delivered straight to your favorite device.